Okay, so now actually since I'm looking at this, I don't thinking about that, maybe we should start with that. Let our beauty ease your grief, which, okay, I'm thinking the beauty part is the deer.
I think so. I don't think it's literal. I actually had the title for a long time before I had the show.
Uh-huh.
And it sort of gives lucky that it sort of that it seems to go together. But I saw that phrase on a placard in front of a church in Harlem when I was wandering around one day, and that phrase always stuck with me.
Right.
And so I think that, the grief has something to do, obviously, with the late 20th century that sort of, shifted over into the phase of the, 21st century. And so I don't know. I mean, maybe the deer are, the grief, and they're trying to ease themselves by, protruding into, modernist architecture or minimalist sculpture, so I think it's more ambiguous.
Uh-huh. I can't even imagine what to have a title before the show. I think that's really interesting stuff, and kind of maybe made the whole show more poetic, because I was thinking now as you're saying that it's almost like your, if it came first, it's almost like you're saying something to the deer, let artists, maybe in a sort of broad way, I'm kind of reading that into it now, letting art and artists and our capability to shift the world and make it what we want, something that can ease the grief of the reality of things, sort of. I'm thinking about Robin O'Neill's show and the connections, but also the differences, and how there is this kind of, in her work, it gets referred to as post-apocalyptic or whatever, but in your work, it feels so real, even though it does feel this destruction of something or time has passed. Like the Detroit, or the idea of taking these drawings or these stages or everything set up and fake, and the deer in these vulnerable positions of kind of maybe about to be destroyed or trapped. Trapped, I guess, maybe is better than being destroyed, trapped somehow. And I was thinking that the deers were a stand-in in a way for you or an artist, but actually, in thinking about that title coming first, it's sort of like a real broad statement of what you can do as an artist and how, in a way, you can make anything beautiful. Because the drawing, the way it's handled, it is so beautiful. It's so seductive. The drawings are so delicate and not secondhand at all. They're really deliberate, and the paintings on paper, everything's fragile. And what do you think about, maybe the question would be, since it is this setup, this stage thing, these fake things, these environments that aren't real, that you appropriated from something, what that means, since as an artist you're making things that obviously aren't real, and yet because the objects that the scenes or the space aren't real, but the object is so real. I don't know, do you think that there's a connection between, or a difference between the reality of real life and art, one being more important than the other, more real, more true?
Wow, that's great. Everything you said is so great. I love that. I don't know if it relates particularly to this specific work, but something that I've been thinking about a lot lately in relationship to art is, kind of its larger function within the culture, and that's obviously kind of always a question, and it's always mutating. But right now, when we're in such a period of complete outrage, but there's something about, I think, the function of art that doesn't let it speak in a really didactic or really overt way about things that are happening in the world, and it has to be a little bit more,
subtle,
poetic,
right?
And it has to kind of use what art does best. There's other ways of protesting the war or the administration or larger issues, but I feel like sometimes art is really good in a sense in terms of speculation, in terms of thinking about picturing things in different ways. I mean, we as a culture are so much about kind of realizing pictures of ourselves into the future, if that kind of makes sense.
Right.
And so, yeah.
That's what I think, too. Like, they're not post-apocalyptic, but they're post sort of childhood. Like, were you born in 1970? Or in around
that? No, I was born in 1967.
Okay, because I was thinking of the time, but it's close enough.
Totally. Yeah, it's a similar to my lifestyle, my main time.
Yes.
Yeah.
And picking that art form from 1970, and that's about that time when it's like your sort of birth of childhood and how I think all the time about how I questioned art a lot more, even though I wanted to make it, and I had that impulse. I always questioned its relevance, just until sort of recently, when I feel that I got old enough to know that things in life in general are so kind of hard for people, whether it is something very political and specific like 9/11, and thinking about how in some ways this work feels in a subtle way, but to directly reference that, like what is it like now, what has happened to our world now, all the precautions and that kind of fear and awareness that like the deer have about their environment, what could happen, how did it get this way to begin with, the kind of destruction in an American way, and then it's like now that there's, and you, like you said, this sort of frustration with our government, but also because it's become so global, so everything, even though it feels really self-centered, everything that's about America actually does seem like it's about the world, because we're having such, so it's like somehow now I feel that making art is a very valid choice, because at the very least we aren't destroying anything, and we can act out our, like you said, I thought that made a lot of sense, like, I forgot how you put it, but something about anticipation or prediction for the future, or what did you call it? Something of the openness.
Like visualizing the future.
Yeah, something about thinking.
Speculation.
And so it's all about kind of hope, or what could happen, or what we could turn it into, and how much it matters, and in that way. So I was asking you a little bit earlier, but it seems like in the pencil drawings that are smaller, more intimate, it's the fawns, or the and then in the bigger paintings, it's these deer, and they're more, they're wiser and a little older. And do you think of any direct? I mean, it almost seems like just even material-wise, like the little more intimate, tiny ones in pencil are the beginning and have this young thing, and then in the bigger, more, you know, but and it also feels maybe a little bit more, these big pinks feel more masculine.
Like more
colors are very, well, especially, I mean, architecture as a traditionally very masculine type thing, and so this one, the colors, and maybe that real pop culture thing seems to be, at least stereotypically in the past, a kind of male domain, you know, and in a way, the drawings have that too, but it's like you've got these little delicate feminine things, like the trees or little leaf things.
I think that's super interesting. I think you could definitely put it in terms of masculine and feminine. When I was making them, I was kind of thinking more in terms of vulnerable and invulnerable, because the deer are pretty invulnerable, and yet they are, in some ways, like, in various ways, seem to be in conflict with their environment in some way, but also the images that they kind of exist within are sort of very invulnerable, and they're designed in that way. Mm-hmm. They are really meant to be, like, the scene from North by Northwest, which is the forest scene. You know, that's all, you know, totally constructed. And the viewer is kind of really meant to see something that's sort of like airtight, and the way we interpret things is very directed, and it becomes, I think, very much a projection of sort of the larger ideas of the time period, you know, the anxieties and the fears, but also like, you know, what maybe people would want and what they find comforting.
Right.
And then the smaller pieces from the art forum are very definitely much more vulnerable. really threatens the sort of sensibility of the larger pieces.
Right.
As well. But at the same time, like, kind of the idea of randomness or chaos as a way of making, as a form of creativity, I think is a very vulnerable way.
Right.
Certainly, like, the artist is certainly leaving things up to chance. And I think, like, for Morris, like, for me, looking at his entire body of work, this is, for me, I see this as, like, a real high point for his work. And it seems like things that he did later, you know, in my mind, kind of, it degenerates into, like, more kind of staging that fits more into, like, relations to culture or architecture.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, now that you're saying that, I'm thinking, and is it Alan Sarah?
Sarah? I think that's how you say it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know where he is. You know, I don't know his name. I've only read it.
Yeah. And it kind of feels like, and what's the Detroit part?
Well, the images that you're seeing, the sort of outdoor images of Robert Morris, that was a giant installation that happened outside the Detroit Art Museum in 1961.
Okay.
And I also felt like the Detroit connection was really interesting because Detroit is such a kind of, you know,
fallen city.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I mean. Exactly.
It's sort of like a symptom of the late 20th century.
Right. It seems like both the artists and the city and especially even just maybe thinking back as recent as the 70s, but something that seems so important, monumental, and gigantic, and industrial even to that kind of artwork and, you know, cars, and then that it's really what we're left with is kind of the ruins of it now, in a way. But then your pieces seem to talk about more about making something out of the ruins and seeing beauty in them and transforming them than lamenting something that happened before. It's like how we don't even nearly remember or know that past, that history very well.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk about the video piece too. Do you call it video? Is it video?
It is. Yes.
Yeah. We'll cut that.
And it's almost about failure, because you do a drawing almost with an intent to fail, and then you go
and learn
to do it. Yeah, and you just go on and do the finished
right.
piece later.
So. And they seem to reference the things that they came from. So, like, the art form, the drawings, that
yeah.
were then, of course, reproduced in art form, but they were drawings, but then they're in art form, and that's, and then, or the magazines, or film still, as opposed to seeing it, say, in theater or something, where there's such a flatness to that.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't be nearly as good if they were stretched on canvas on frame, because that feels so complete and so self-referencing kind of.
And self-contained.
Self-contained.
Yeah.
And this leaves it much more open. And I mean, of course, I just love paper, so I'm biased that way. But, you know, and I guess to me, I would say that the connection in the animation to that, or the equivalent idea, would be that I love that it's such a short clip. And the loop happens so fast that you're very aware of having seen the whole thing. And to me, that's the same idea almost as drawing on paper versus something on canvas or having a really long video, because it feels accessible and open at the same time, you know, and not too big of an endeavor or something
right.
to both deal with as a viewer.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. Not narrative, and you don't even feel that you're supposed to be finding one. You don't even think. You don't even waste any time thinking about that, how it's what you're supposed to be getting from it. You really just watch it, which is nice.
Well, that's real. Again, super perceptive, because the connection between, like, these drawings in particular, the small graphite drawings, and the animation were really particular. You know, I really wanted the piece to be shown on a small, flat screen.
You're right.
You know,
right.
But it worked.
No.
I think on a larger monitor, I don't think it would work as a projection
right.
in this particular
no.
context.
No, it's so true. It's so much better. It's really intimate. And, you know, the other thing that's nice about them is that there's a little bit of something kind of creepy or slightly ominous about them, but it's so subtle, and it's almost like you don't really realize that until you've been sucked in by the beauty, which makes me go back to the title and think about that, because you first just realize that they're very likable, you know, and you want to look at them, and I don't know, like this piece from Artificial Digest, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, I think I even know people in houses like that, and I've come to this house still, so it's kind of maybe a time period that we still look at the architecture or the clothing or whatever as a kind of futuristic thing, even now, way later, and that's
yeah.
weird. Or, of course, post-conscious, like, we still think of those things as something
futuristic.
Yes, yeah, and how strange that is, even though our idea of what it would be like, it isn't so much based on fear or vulnerability, and it's almost like a, something that just comes along with it for the ride, those ideas, and so we accept them quickly and we move on, and I think that's really great. It's such a good show.
Thank you.